Blog Talk Radio.
Thursday night, you know what that means. It's time for the latest edition of Politically Direct, and of course brought to you by Insider and Jay. Ladies and gentlemen, I am New Jersey's premier journalist, and of course the sworn enemy of all the toxic progressives, the social justice clowns, and the woke fools throughout the state of New Jersey. It is me, Fernando Uribe. Hoping you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. We haven't been on the air in a few weeks, obviously. We had the League of Municipalities the week before Thanksgiving and some episodes before. But, folks, happy December to everyone here tuning in tonight live on Blog Talk Radio and certainly listening in on insidernj.com/podcast. And hope you all had a wonderful holiday again, December. Can't believe it, folks. 2021 just about over. This year has flown by. But you know what? Politics never takes a break here on the show. And we're certainly delighted to have you join us here and make this a part of your Thursday night listening from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State. Of course, all my friends that listen throughout the U.S. of A. Now, if you want to write to the show's inbox, it's politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. If you have any suggestions for a guest or a topic, maybe something I haven't covered, or maybe somebody new you want me to interview in 2022, write to me. I love to hear from you, and I promise you I'll answer the email promptly. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram, folks, at Professor Fernando Uribe. Tons of new followers, plenty of likes. Of course, I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, whether it's about pro wrestling, politics, politically incorrect humor, my memes. I don't know. I'm a smartass. So, you know, whatever it is I'm posting, I know you're watching, I know you're liking and laughing too. So just me on Instagram, once again, folks, at Professor Fernando Uribe. And certainly hit me up on Twitter, at NoFilterUribe. That's at NoFilter, U-R-I-B-E. And certainly make sure you like Politically Direct on Facebook. And certainly, again, folks, this week's edition, as always, of the four-time award-winning Politically Direct with Fernando Uribe is brought to you by Insider NJ. Folks, I would argue Insider NJ is the preeminent source for all of your need for news about what's going on in New Jersey politics. And again, nobody does it better, ladies and gentlemen, than Insider NJ. Once again, please go to www.insidernj.com for the absolute, again, best coverage of what's going on in the world of politics here in the Garden State. And I can't say enough how proud I am to be a part of the Insider NJ team. It was great to
see some of my Insider NJ family at the League of Municipalities in Atlantic City. Great to see Ryan Graham there, of course, his brother Mike. I'm very grateful to them and the Graham family overall for their support of this show since it started in January of 2018. Not just because they compensate me financially, but it's because of believing in the show, its content, and all of the great guests I've had since the podcast started. But also, folks, you know, it just sort of goes down the line. My Insider NJGM, Pete Onelia, great guy. Sometimes drives me a little bit crazy, you know, doesn't always post things on time or doesn't post things enough for my liking, but that's just me, you know. I like to nitpick and you know, I tend to bitch and moan sometimes about those things, but he's a great boss to work for. I can't say enough about Pete Onelia. And folks, you know, one of the things that I take pride on, it's not because I'm trying to pick on people, but, you know, as an adult who's played organized sports in his lifetime, you know, you do it because you want to be part of a team. You want to succeed together. And that's what we do at Insider NJ. And you don't always have to like your teammates. I sure as hell don't. I think I make it very clear whenever I'm in front of a microphone, whether it's tonight or other shows, where I don't think very highly of my Insider NJ teammates, whether it's Maxie, you know, the editor-in-chief, Maxie Pizarro, or little JJ Lasseter, one of the columnists there. I don't really care for them personally or their political beliefs because they're just really, really misguided. But I'm sure they feel the same way about me, and that's okay. But it's not about testosterone, folks. It's about really more about the fact that, hey, I respect what they do. They're great columnists. I don't have an issue, per se in that regard. You know, they do their brand of journalism, which is fine. Whatever. If you like it, so be it. If you don't, hey, good for you. Just like people like my brand of journalism, or they don't. It's that simple. And, you know, we have other great columnists there. We have Fred Snowflack, who sometimes I don't always agree with his columns, but he's great to read. And even Alan Steinberg, who, you know, loves to piss off a lot of people in New Jersey. Very thought-provoking columnist, but not just only writing for Insider NJ, but also now writing for the Star-Ledger. God knows the Star-Ledger needs a spike in some of its views and traffic. So, and if you want that, you'll get it with Alan Steinberg. He's a great writer. We don't agree on anything ideologically, I think, which is kind of funny. But, I'm an old soul. I know he's an old soul. And we just get along, you know. We can agree or disagree like gentlemen. It doesn't get bombastic. It doesn't get, just ugly and disrespectful. You know, again, you know, we can feel what we feel, and it's great to have him on. And, he's been a regular on this show. He's appeared on my Real Talk show via StreamYard on Monday nights live at 6 p.m. And, he's a guy I enjoy working with. So, you know, again, folks, you don't always have to like your teammates, but together I would argue that we make up probably the best fives. And there are other great columnists too. Don't get it twisted. You know, I respect everyone else who contributes to Insider NJ. And it's just, again, great to be a part of this team. You know, they're the best when it comes to breaking news, when it comes to, you know, what it means, you know, to be part of a cohesive team, you know. So it's interesting. Again, I'm proud of it. But when you check out the website, folks, at www.insidernj.com, click on the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. And, you know, whether it's about breaking news again or columns or what's going on at the State House again, since it's still on break, we don't resume really the legislature again, reconvenes the new legislature until January. But you'll find out what's going on in Trenton, and you find out because of Insider NJ. So again, folks, make it a part of your daily viewing, www.insidernj.com. Make sure you like Insider NJ on Facebook and also follow Insider NJ on Twitter. And as a reminder, always start and end your day with Insider NJ. Folks, as a reminder also, the opinions and views expressed here and every week are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or the staff, as well as our sponsors. So, again, folks, politics never takes a break here. And one of the things I take considerable pride in is having those exclusive guests, those men and women who are not just interesting candidates, legislators, government officials, but also journalists. Because, folks, as journalists and in different brands of journalism, you know, we owe it to the viewing public, to the consuming public, to be responsible and to be forthright and to be transparent and just to be, you know, honest. And you might have a slant, you might, you know, it depends on what you're reading. But if you're doing your job well, you know, people will see it. And the guy that really comes to mind when I think about responsible journalism, folks, he's my guest tonight. He's the founder and the editor of New Brunswick Today. Again, if you don't check out New Brunswick Today, what are you waiting for? Bookmark it on whatever browser you use. Folks, again, www.newbrunswicktoday.com. Great, great news site in Central Jersey. Folks, he is Charlie Credible joining us here tonight on Politically Direct. What's going on, brother?
Good to be with you, Fernando. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, it's always a pleasure. It's always good to talk to a fellow journalist, obviously. And how was your Thanksgiving? How was family? What's going on?
Oh, very good. Thank you for asking. Got to get some much-needed rest and relaxation and hang out with my whole family. How about you?
It was great, yeah. It was actually, you know, I mean, I wasn't very happy with the NFL games on Thanksgiving,
sure,
being a Cowboys fan, but it was good to spend time with family, all things considering, trying to come out of COVID, obviously, right? As they say this year, as we approach 2022, in 29 days, hopefully we're trying to put this behind us. It's been a challenging year, man, but it was good to spend it with family. It was good to head to the League of Municipalities the week before in Atlantic City. That's always an interesting time. Charlie, have you ever hit the league?
You know, I haven't. I kind of want to, though.
Oh, man, listen, next year down in AC, we got to hit the tables, number one, and smoke a cigar at the table. So we got to do that, brother. But it's good to have you, man. And, we'll get to some good stories I know you've been covering on New Brunswick Today. But let's try to dissect, you know. It's really, you know, it's been 30 days since a really interesting election here in New Jersey.
Yeah.
A lot of people called me crazy because I called this race very close. And people said, Fernando, you're out of your mind. I had some people that, you know the pollsters at Monmouth and Fairly Ridiculous. And, the other Rowan. And I just said, listen, I talked to a lot of people on the ground. I knew Democrats had a large registration advantage. And I just knew there were pockets of the state, especially Democrats, that I knew were unhappy with the governor. And I said,
right,
on not just this show, but other shows that I host, I said, hey, you know, ideally it would have been nice to see Jack win, but I kind of see the governor winning by 3 or 4 points. And sure enough, that's pretty much what it was, Charlie. So, I wish I had that luck picking my lottery numbers, but
right,
why was this race as close as it was?
Yeah, well, I think in some of my, you know, previous chats with you, I've said it was Murphy's to lose, and he almost lost it. He really, I think, just didn't, do enough outreach to his own base. I think a lot of folks were taken for granted, and, he also, you know, was dealing with a lot of backlash for some of the pandemic policies and, you know, some things that were within his control and some things that were beyond his control. He was taking all the heat for it. And so I think he needed to work harder. And, you know, I remember we were talking while he was away in Italy and, you know, kind of aloof and out of touch and not really doing the traditional campaigning you would expect. Somebody who, as he said, was running like he's 10 points behind. He was really, truly running like he was 10 points ahead, and he, you know, almost lost it, in the end.
Oh, absolutely. A great observation there. And, you know, for a lot of people that thought, oh, this would get called an election night, everyone that I knew was in Asbury Park, and they were waiting to party all night long. Man, they had to wait a couple of days. You know, it was kind of a crazy couple of days. And, you know, I'm not trying to feed into conspiracy theories or anything, Charlie, but, you know, I went to bed pretty late that on election night. I went to bed around, 2:30 Wednesday morning. I was watching, you know, NJTV. I was watching CNN. I was watching Fox. I was watching MSNBC, you know, one of the five viewers that they have. And, I was watching the election results in Virginia and New Jersey. I was like, wow, this is interesting. And, you know, I hate to make the comparison because it's 6 hours. About four and a half hours south of here. It's kind of like a completely different world politically, but I think it was a small microcosm of the problem I think that many Democrats moving forward are going to have, Charlie, when it comes to running. And again, I'm, you know, Jersey and Virginia are very different, you know, in terms of their political climate. But it was almost like a simple blueprint, like, hey, you know, kind of run on the bread and butter issues of, you know, you mess with parents and their kids, you want to be all woke, you want to subscribe to all this nonsense. And you know, Charlie, I talk about it a lot. You know, I know you see my social media, and hopefully you listen to this show and watch my other things. I mean, you know how much I trounce on the woke crowd. That sort of stuff doesn't work. And it just seems like, I think Democrats need to get back to the middle, though, dude, because if they don't, I mean, if they wish to sort of die in a hill for wokeness and this and that, Charlie, I'm going to tell you something, bro. They do so at their own peril, because I think it's going to end up costing them seats. We saw it a little bit in the legislature. We saw it in Virginia. And I think with 2022 around the corner, Democrats better kind of get back to the middle real quick, bro. Otherwise, it's going to be a red tsunami next year. Where am I wrong here?
Well, I agree with some of your analysis, not necessarily your prescription to, you know, move to some sort of middle ground or center. I think on many issues, folks are just not happy with the results, whether it's, you know, the DMV or unemployment or, you know, some of the nonsensical policies that the Murphy administration has tried to push. I wouldn't say that they're, you know, too far to the left. I would just say that they're, you know, in many cases for show and not, you know, not don't have the sufficient depth to actually address the issues, you know, and the devil's in the details. And we see in municipalities like New Brunswick some real bad details. You know, we have one less public school than we had when Phil Murphy took office because they allowed the district to give it up to a private developer. You know, we have a lot more shootings and murders than we did when Phil Murphy took office. So I think those are the kinds of things that are really, you know, carrying the most sway with the voters. And, you know, some of the performative stuff on both sides is not really moving the needle, in my view.
Well, you know what? That's a fair observation. And folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 9:17 here on the East Coast on Blog Talk Radio. And it's a pleasure to have once again on here a guy who I like to call a regular on the program. He is the founder and editor of New Brunswick Today, the great Charlie Cradleville, here joining us on Politically Direct. You know, Charlie, let me tell you something. I like your analysis, and I think it's really spot on. But the reason I think I sort of gave that narrative is because, you know, again, you know, it's a month out after the last election, and as we turn the clocks, obviously 2022 is around the corner. The midterms are coming. You know, where I live up here in North Jersey, you know, a lot of these House seats seem pretty safe. You know, Representative Ceres looks pretty safe by me. Nearby, Bill Pascrell, sort of like the poster child for, like, career politician, if there ever was one. Next to Nick Scutari, of course, they're kind of like neck and neck. You got representatives like Josh Gottheimer in Bergen County, kind of a safe seat. But it looks like, you know, in Central and South Jersey, you know, Democrats there, I think, might face some challenges. And again, I don't want to just say that it looks like it's going to be a red wave next November. That's historically what happens in midterms. If I'm not mistaken, I think only twice in history have we seen in 1932 under FDR and then 2002 with George W. Bush, where the opposing party did not win the House. It seems like, you know, with a slim majority the Democrats have, and I think, again, we're seeing what happened in Virginia. I think what we saw in the way that, you know, whether we like it or not, whether you want to call it fear-mongering or being politically astute, whatever you want to call it, it just seems like when Republicans run on the culture war or some culture war issues, it doesn't mean they always win. But it really energizes people. It really mobilizes people. You saw it in Virginia, right? You saw a gubernatorial candidate pretty much telling parents, like, oh, no, parents shouldn't be involved in their kids' education or you need to sit down. I'm sort of paraphrasing, but if that's the tone that a lot of Democrats want to take when it comes to medical freedom or parental rights or whatever, Charlie, again, that's just – I think that's a recipe for disaster, brother.
Well, I think that, you know, the culture war is obviously something that energizes people on you know, both sides of the aisle. But, you know, the issues that, you know, make the difference and actually, you know, move independents and you know, people who don't normally vote to vote, I feel like, you know, the culture war is not really driving that so much these days. And, you know, ultimately it's people who are frustrated with government that's not working like it used to, or, you know, not serving them. You know, I mean, I certainly look at what was done today at the State House and what a mess that was. And, you know, what message does that send to the average person? You know, I think it's a real kind of arrogant attitude that, you know, the government is closed to the public, and it's just not, you know, people are fed up with that. I think that, you know, we've all been through so much at this point, and it feels like now that the election is over, you know, they don't want to deal with the public anymore. And I think it's true to some extent on both sides of the aisle, but, you know, we just deserve so much better here in New Jersey. And you know, unfortunately, you keep having the same people in power, you know, you're going to get the same
I'm with you. Listen, we can agree to disagree on a lot on some things, though, Charlie, but I totally agree with this one. I mean, absolutely. It's like you want transparency and accountability from people in Trenton. And to your point about, hey, we keep electing the same people, and that's what we're left with when it comes to leadership. But, you know, we talked a little bit about the gubernatorial race, but legislative races also got a lot of attention. And perhaps the biggest one, and, you know, for everyone listening at home, if you didn't have a chance to listen to the interview, I was one of the first journalists to interview State Senator-elect Edward Durr on this show, literally a week after he beat former state president. State Senate President Steve Sweeney. So if you have a chance, folks, check it out at InsideEnergy.com/podcast. But it seemed like whether it's Edward Durr today or Republicans in the State Assembly, they're really, really kind of make noise about this, Charlie. And I think a lot of people, whether it's Edward Durr, and we know some of the grief he's gotten for different things, whatever, the bottom line is this could get really messy quickly. As you alluded to today, where, you know, unfortunately COVID continues to get politicized. Both sides of the aisle, I think, tend to do some things that can turn the other off or turn people away, right, people in the middle. Today was not a good reflection of what government should be, as you said. So, you know, is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I mean, I would go so far as to say it was a disgrace. I think that you know, on both, again, both parties really, you know, ignoring the people and looking out for themselves. So to the Democrats, I would say, listen, you know, if you're really concerned about COVID, you can have virtual meetings still, you know, but if you're, you know, going around doing campaign events, doing lots of indoor stuff, you know, it's hypocritical to say, oh, well, we have to take the you know, all these precautions at the State House when you've got, you know, folks are overwhelmingly, you know, vaccinated in you know, the legislature and in the state, you know. So I just feel like, you know, it's very performative what the Democrats did with this. And like I said, it sends a message that they don't want to see or deal with the public. And, you know, it might seem like a minor trivial thing, but once you start making it hard to just access public buildings. I mean, this is not like a police station or the CIA headquarters. It's the State House. You're supposed to be able to access it. And part of a, you know, sort of political brinksmanship, they start instituting policies that are not only going to apply to the legislators who are paid to be state workers, but to the general public and to, you know, try to create an in-person meeting where they can, you know, deny people access. And we saw it being, you know, obviously selectively enforced, poorly enforced, poorly planned out, just a total failure on that. And then to the Republicans, I would say, you know, show up for your job, play by the rules, even if you don't like them, and, you know, bring the fight to the courts, which incidentally they did, and they got a successful ruling today to bring a temporary halt to this. So if they had just cooled down with the histrionics and the, you know, performative stuff, they could have looked like they were actually fighting for the public and winning, but instead it was all about them, and it was all about, you know, it was a standoff, basically, a bravado competition between both parties, and no one being served from the public, these education and poverty issues going unaddressed, the crime going unaddressed, and, you know, COVID itself not being, addressed. Instead, they're bickering with each other over, their own rules, and it's just so, unfortunate to watch. We deserve better.
You know, it's political theater at its worst. Usually when you use that acronym, it's like, oh, it's something theater at its finest. No, it's political theater at its worst here. And you saw that. Charlie, let me pick your brain a little bit here on some of these election results. Again, the biggest upset probably that everyone's still talking about as we await for him to take office on January 11th when he's sworn in was, Edward Durr. You know, I know Steve Kush, the operative that ran that campaign, as well as some others. It's really funny, though, man. You know, you think about, to your point before, where we keep electing the same people and we keep getting the same results. Again, it's sort of that quote by Einstein, right? Insanity is defined as doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. But it seems it sounds like in LD3, people rallied behind the guys that, spent less than $200, okay? I think a pair of Apple AirPods cost more than what I think he put into that campaign, while, Steve Sweeney had George Norcross money. They pumped in a couple million to that race, and to the point where you start seeing Steve Sweeney knocking on doors, which is something you didn't really see in recent years. And the guy that's been the state Senate president since 2009 when he ousted Dick Cody is no longer the Senate president. He's no longer a state senator. Again, as Edward Durr will take office in January 11th. What were your thoughts when you saw those election results come in?
Yeah, definitely a surprise. I know that our ballot system has a very heavy coattail effect. So the fact that Gloucester County came out for Cittarelli and was turned off by Murphy definitely played a big role. I don't see Durr winning without that dynamic at the top of the ticket, that, that close of a race. But I also know that there's significant, dislike for Steve Sweeney, even in his own district. I've knocked on doors there, and I know firsthand that, they know what they're getting with him, and they don't necessarily like it. So when presented with an alternative this year, they made a different choice, and now they'll have a new representative. It's also obviously made a big shakeup down in Trenton with all these leadership, promotions and whatnot. But yeah, I do feel that that Steve Sweeney was not really well liked. He was just getting in based on that coattail effect and that machine. And, when there was a tough race, Murphy on the ropes at the top of the ticket, Sweeney really didn't have what it took to keep his own, seat of power.
No, absolutely. And again, it wasn't just Steve Sweeney. It was also his assembly running mates who also got the heave-ho on election day. So that was a very interesting race.
Yeah, he did pick up a lot of seats, the Republicans in that area.
Yeah, I'm not going to sound hypocritical here. I mean, I'm giddy seeing seven Republican women going to Trenton on January. I'm not going to lie. I'm excited. I think for a party that still has to sort of resonate more with women and black and brown people in New Jersey or nationally, Charlie, I was delighted to see that. These aren't like some run-of-the-mill female legislators. I mean, these are nice, respectable women that ran good, hard campaigns. We saw it along the Jersey Shore, where, for example, State Senator Gopal, a guest on this show a few times already, as a matter of fact, we'll have him back on in January, barely survived along the Jersey Shore. As a matter of fact, I think he's the only blue legislator in the Jersey Shore area in all those districts. So I think you started seeing to some extent, though, Charlie, that back to the premise before we discussed, that I think that, Republicans or maybe grassroots campaigns were able to sort of seize on some of that dislike for Murphy. And again, as I mentioned to you, when I went to sleep on Wednesday morning at 2:30 in the morning, I saw Cittarelli up, 5,000 votes. I said, oh my God, this is really happening. And of course, when I wake up at 8:30 to go to campus, I hear, well, there were some, the mail-in votes weren't counted yet in Bergen County. I said, oh, here we go. but by mail. And sure enough, miraculously, Charlie, I saw the governor up 25,000 votes. I said, oh, wow, okay. Jeez, I'm shocked. You know, it's interesting about these results. Again, it doesn't mean that, you know, Republicans made some of a dent in the majorities for Democrats. I think maybe it's a good blueprint for them moving into 2023 to kind of zero in on some of these legislators that have been there forever. And the reason I bring that up is because, you know, I'm going to sort of relegate it now locally to your neck of the woods in your backyard where, you know, I love my years in New Brunswick. You know, the city of New Brunswick has a special place in my heart as a Rutgers alumnus living there. But it breaks my heart, man, what's happened to New Brunswick and that, and, uh-huh. you know, that area in Middlesex County where it's comprised of a couple of different districts. You know, keep reelecting the same people. And you're just, you know, I love New Brunswick, but, you know, again, I apologize to any of your listeners and your the great people that read your fine publication, but, man, New Brunswick just seems like it's becoming a dump, bro, and it breaks my heart, man.
Well, it is a great city with a great history and, you know, first and foremost, really, really great people. But, you know, we're going through a tough time, and, you know, unfortunately, we've got some really out-of-touch leadership here. I'm not just talking about the Assembly and the Senate. But, you know, here, you know, at the mayor's office, we've had the mayor for 32 years now almost. And, you know, a lot of the same problems going unchecked, you know, and getting worse, quite frankly. In the pandemic, we've seen, you know, real increase in homelessness, the gun violence and, you know, just violence in general and poverty and desperation. And, you know, throughout all of it, you know, City Hall is closed to the public and, you know, the mayor is more elusive than ever, and you know, it's really, you know, the only things that get attention and move forward are, you know, shiny new buildings and redevelopment projects that, you know, those who are in poverty aren't going to really get much enjoyment out of, and the deep-seated problems continue to fester and get worse here, and I know that, you know, we're not the only place where that's going on in New Jersey. It's definitely, you know, a lot of places where there's political dynasties and, you know, out of touch regimes that are, you know, putting the needs of corporations above the people of the city. But I just know that it's unfortunate that, you know, Phil Murphy presents himself as a progressive alternative or some sort of, you know, person who's free from the machine. But every chance he gets in Middlesex County to cozy up to the political machine, he is doing whatever they want. And, you know, basically going along with the same program that's gotten us these poor results for decades.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because I know that, you know, the governor has been a shrewd politician. He makes it a point to come up to Hudson as well up here, to Bergen, Essex, sort of like the establishment machines, right? And, you know, what you mentioned about development, and obviously it's not a problem that's only, you know, pervasive in central Jersey. It's happening everywhere, right? Up here in Hudson County. I mean, you know, I walk two blocks, Charlie, and I see Manhattan. Okay. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of development here.
Wow.
But, you know, I think about other parts of the state where it just seems like municipalities are just grossly acquiescing to developers and really pricing people out when it comes to, you know, the notion of making New Jersey affordable. Again, and we've talked about it before. I mean, I'm the same person that cries foul all the time where, you know, I mean, you can't really blame Republicans in the legislature because it's Democrats that you know, write the budget, that address spending, that raise a tax or not or whatever. And, you know, for 20 years now, you know, again, and people just say, oh, Fernando, you're letting Republicans off the hook. Well, but Charlie, it's not legislators like Michael Testa or Joe Panaccio or Anthony Bucco that are in the majority. It's, you know, the poster children for career politicians like Nick Scutari, coincidentally, the new state Senate president and others.
Yep.
You know, as you said, at the local level, it's these democratically run cities for 10, 20, 30 years. And again, I'm not saying Republicans are perfect. I'm not saying Republicans have all the answers. But again, you know, we're talking about, you know, almost half a century of government by one party in multiple urban areas of the state, and they're still not doing better. And if not, if anything, some are regressing. And that breaks my heart to hear, whether it's in New Brunswick, whether it's in Plainfield, whether it's in New Edison, whether it's wherever, it's really heartbreaking. I just don't think enough people care. And that's really, really disheartening too.
Yeah. And it's not just that people are getting priced out. You know, obviously we're seeing a lot of pricing pressures on various goods and, you know, housing is one of those things, but it's also the things that are being built, the priorities that are being addressed, and this goes to all levels, are things that are, you know, negatively impacting quality of life. You know, they're building, housing that doesn't fit with the character of the community or add to the character of the community. They're building lots of warehouses that, in some cases are, you know, crammed into places they shouldn't be. And, you know, they're just, many, there's this sense across many communities in New Jersey that, you know, the best days are behind us and, you know, the good things about the towns are being, you know, destroyed or you know, overcome by all these, development. And that's what happens when you give away the farm to the private interests and to development corporations that then get to dictate the terms of what they're going to do. And it's a race to the bottom where they make the towns compete with one another to get their opportunity to work with developers. And then, you know, they insist on getting 30-year tax abatements for anything they build. And they, just totally game the system. And, you know, the public is left saying, you know, what the heck? Our town is going down the tubes, and we got nothing to show for it. So I do feel that, you know, it's at all levels, but the biggest problem is, you know, the urge to just race to the bottom and give away the farm to these, you know, real estate interests that obviously don't have the community's best interest at heart.
I agree with you. And, again, you know, when you think about a town like New Brunswick, you know, you think about where it's really centrally located as much as you can possibly say in the state. And it's
got
a lot going for it. It's a 30-35 minute train ride to Manhattan or Hoboken, maybe a 40 minute train ride to Manhattan. New Jersey Transit obviously has a huge, you know, train station there that really, you know, connects to a lot of the state. And it's an attractive place to move to. Right. And it's disappointing where you're seeing developers have so much influence at the local level with municipalities. And again, you know, they're constructing these buildings, making rent absolutely crazy and unaffordable. I mean, you look at the idea, again, just maybe it's apples and oranges though, Charlie, but up here in Hunton County, you have developers here. I get it. You know, it's two blocks from Manhattan. You know, I live near a light rail that gets me to Hoboken in 8 minutes, to the train station in 8 minutes too. And you're seeing rents at some of these, you know, a lot of these luxury buildings going up where a one bedroom is $2,000, $2,500. And the walls are made of paper, right? And these developers are getting away with making these buildings where I feel bad for someone that like hammers a frame in their living room. You know, you got to be careful. The nail might go through the wall and hit your neighbor. I don't know. It's really, 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 I think it's really, really just alarming. And I think it's really disappointing that these municipalities have really allowed this to happen. And I think it's an indictment of government, you know, and again, this is not, you know, meant in a physical way, just government getting fat at the expense of people. And, you know, I wish more people would wake up, but that doesn't seem to be happening.
Yeah. You know, the term we use for it is regulatory capture when, you know, the bad guys have taken control of the checks and balances that are supposed to stop them. And I think that in many towns that's, you know, happened long ago. And so we're sort of seeing developers dictate the terms of what's getting done. And even here in New Brunswick, they're telling us, you know, the SDA is not going to build you a school. So Robert Wood Johnson is going to decide when and where your school gets built. And, you know, that's just wrong.
No, it certainly is. Folks, it's 9:39 on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. Joining me tonight is the amazing owner, founder, and editor of New Brunswick Today, one of the preeminent news sites in Central Jersey, folks. You can check it out at www.newbrunswicktoday.com. He is Charlie Cradible joining us tonight here on Politically Direct. You know, Charlie, when we think about at the local level, I know you mentioned earlier to me off the air that it was you were at a Board of Elections meeting. Tell us what that was like. And at a local level, I mean, what are how laborious is it to sit through these meetings? I know it's the bread and butter of what New Brunswick today is, right? To sort of be a vigilant eyes and ears for the public in New Brunswick or in Middlesex County. Tell me how laborious that was today.
Yeah, well, I will say that, you know, I go to a lot of government meetings talking, you know, municipal councils, boards of education, county government entities, authority boards.
It's not just New Brunswick, right? I mean, just to be clear, I'm sorry to cut you off. It's not just New Brunswick.
Yeah,
right?
No, we get
towns.
Around. We go to different places in the county and,
okay.
You know, wherever the action's at. So, but zoning and planning, obviously, as mentioned already, pretty important stuff. But no board has been more interesting to me than the Middlesex County Board of Elections. Boards of elections are fascinating, partly because, you know, they deal with a lot of issues that are, you know, unforeseen, complicated, and sensitive. So basically, you know, very few people pay attention to it, but in every county, the board is deciding which paper ballots to count and which ones not to count. So every little snafu or you know, complication that happens with voting in the entire county is going to end up before this board in one way or another. It's also interesting because by law, unlike most boards, they have to have an equal number of members from each of the two major political parties. So you've got it recently expanded from 4 to 6 members, so now it's 3 Democrats and 3 Republicans, and they don't always agree on everything. So there's a lot of really kind of candid debate and discussion on the spot about various issues, various problems. And, you know, the reason I've been so vigilant of that board is because we have had a slew of election-related problems, you know, in recent years, but especially this year with the advent of the electronic poll books that were rolled out really hastily this year and unfortunately caused some real serious problems here in Middlesex County because, you know, compounded with the fact that the county had failed to have paper backup ballots, paper provisional ballots on site. And so you had some places where folks were being given emergency ballots, but the AG was telling them not to do that, so then they stopped doing that. Many people were just waiting in long lines, and the machines were jammed up and not working for hours, and some people just left and didn't vote. And I think it actually, you know, was probably, you know, hurtful to Murphy in the overall outcome because many of his voters didn't get the chance to actually vote because the equipment that, you know, was installed and instituted didn't perform as advertised and actually caused some real serious problems. So I was among those calling for them to extend the hours of voting that day, and I've continued to investigate. And unfortunately, it seems like the governor is still in denial about this and, you know, seems to think that the problems were not widespread and, you know, insist that, you know, without having all the facts, they're going to continue to use these problematic electronic devices in future elections. So I'm really interested in this stuff. I know that, you know, I'm a big believer in the system and trying to make things work. And, you know, it can all fall apart so easily if there's not good election administration and good election equipment and that the information, you know, accurately is given out to the public. And unfortunately, there's just so many places where we're falling short. And as a result, people are, you know, being disenfranchised or just checking out and saying, I don't even want to vote because they don't believe in the system. So I think we've got a lot of work to do. Tonight was the only member of the public at the board meeting, so I got my 8 minutes to grill them and say my piece and got it all on video and, you know, always learn something at that board because there's just so many different situations that come up and so many things that are changing. Of course, we've seen, you know, in the last series of election, no election conducted under the same rules. The rules have changed every time in very significant ways, partly due to COVID, partly due to changes passed by the legislature and just partly due to changes over time. But it's a really fascinating board, so I do try to go to every one and get it on video, and I've definitely made some friends and enemies and learned a lot, you know, doing this kind of stuff.
No, listen, Charlie, I mean, and that's great that you're doing that, especially if you are able to, you know, again, have your amount of minutes during the public portion. That's amazing. Because if people aren't taking advantage of these opportunities to go speak to the Board of Elections, I mean, they're losing out. I mean, again, you're performing an incredible service to your viewers and to your readers by doing that. And I'm with you. I think, you know, when I went to vote and I saw these electronic tablets, you know, being used, I said, ah, this is a recipe for disaster. I could just imagine it freezes. You know, for anyone that's ever had an iPad or a tablet of any kind or an iPhone or whatever, you know that the fear of, you know, something freezing up and you're in the middle of doing something, Jesus Christ, man. Like, you just know it's a recipe for disaster. And it just seems that, again, you know, if the governor's office or the state board of elections had more than a year to prep for this, right? People weren't going to government buildings, right? People were working from home, or only certain personnel were going to buildings. Well, you're assuming that they could have worked on this a lot more diligently and make sure that a lot of the, as they say, the bad, you know, corks and screws were out of it, but it just seems like it wasn't. And you're right. I read that where people were turned away from voting. And I think, especially in a lot of blue areas, in urban areas, that did a disservice to the governor where people that wanted to vote for him couldn't, you know. And again, you know, it's one of those things where if you're Republican, you know, you made it to vote, but sometimes even those people were turned away. I think moving forward, especially for the next midterms in 23, like, Jesus Christ, like, what the hell are they doing in Trenton? Like, get your act together, you know, work on this to make sure it's not a problem. But you know, that's asking too much of Trenton sometimes, brother.
Well, the thing that always gets me, and especially you get this vibe when you attend the election board meetings, is there's a lot of, you know, passing the buck or, you know, throwing shade between the counties and the state. The counties are always complaining, oh, we didn't get guidance from the state, or the state didn't do this or whatever. And the state always defers to the counties whenever something goes wrong. They say, oh, that's up to the county. We're just supervising. And, you know, really no one's actually looking at the private vendors, the companies like ES&S who made those poll books. And the county spent millions of dollars to buy them after the legislature kind of forced that to happen with their early voting legislation. And I will say early voting was a success, but the election day was a disaster. And the irony of it was that, you know, they were using these electronic poll books on election day when really they didn't have to do that, and they certainly didn't have to have them connect to wireless networks to download the state voter registration file, because on election day, unlike early voting, everyone could only go to one polling place. You're supposed to go to your assigned polling place. So really there was no need for real-time updating and constantly refreshing the data. You just had to have the list of voters, like the old-fashioned paper book that we all used to use. And, you know, I think in the rush to implement the early voting, they also said, well, let's also use them for election day, and didn't think through the fact that that would create a very different situation when 3,400 polling places are all open at once, and all, you know, every time a new voter checks in, it's trying to download a huge file, you know, over a wireless network. It was a totally foreseeable failure that they did.
Yeah, absolutely. Play. Again, and if you're expecting, you know, problems with Wi-Fi and all that, like, hey, you know, if there isn't a good network, not good Wi-Fi, the ability to download, you know what it's like, man. You're on an iPad, right, or on your phone.
Yeah, and you always have a backup. Something. You should always have a backup plan. You know, that was just totally lacking. They were caught off guard, and unfortunately, people were disenfranchised. And, you know, the Board of Elections is one of the only avenues I have to get questions answered. The you know, county PR people aren't answering. The county clerk is totally MIA. And, you know, ES&S has not responded to any of my questions about this stuff, the voting machine company. So, you know, my 8 minutes at the Board of Elections is really the prime time to put them on the spot and you know, learn what's really going on. And you know, I keep pressing them to do a full, you know, analysis of what went wrong to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Oh, listen, and I applaud you for that. Folks, it's 9:49 here in the East Coast here. On Blog Talk Radio, we're about to wrap up shortly here with the owner and founder and the editor of the great Central Jersey news site, New Brunswick Today, at newbrunswicktoday.com, the great Charlie Carterville here. Join us on insidernj.com/podcast here for Politically Direct. You know, Charlie, let me ask you this, because when I went to the league, or even when I go, and I go to a lot of networking events, like next week I'm going to the statewide Hispanic Chamber of Commerce Winter Gala up here in North Jersey. a black tie event. I like going to these things, especially during this election season. There are a lot of campaign events, a lot of mixers, whatever. I don't know if you come across the same thing, but I always find it funny when I go to these events or even at the league, you know, the election's over. People are going to all these open bars and networking and, oh, where are you from? Oh, what firm are you representing or who do you work for? I always find it funny, Charlie, when people, again, a good portion of people know who I am, whether it was the Insider NG party or other mixers that I went to throughout the 2 days there. And it's almost like people look at me and they're very careful of what they say around me. It's like, I'm not recording you. Calm down, for God's sake. Like, relax. Like, have a cocktail. Like, we're here BSing, you know. But I find it really funny, even during the league or when I go to these events at any point in the year for networking purposes or just because I get free tickets to these campaign events, man, people are really careful around me. And I'm just like, yo, I'm a regular person. Calm down. We're off the record here, you know. Do you ever find yourself kind of getting that vibe from people when you go to things?
Oh, yeah. No, I get it a lot, but I get all types. I get some people who, you know, try to schmooze you, and they act real nice, and sometimes it's sincere and sometimes it's fake. But I also definitely get a lot of people who put up an immediate wall, you know, a guard, just because they don't want to say the wrong thing or I guess don't want to, get any questions that might be on the record. But you know, like you, I'm a nice guy. I do like to get to know people, especially when you have a different type of setting. You know, it's one thing when you're in the, you know, stuffy government meeting setting, and it's another thing when you're at the bar or, you know, run into somebody at the supermarket or whatever, and you get to know them a little better. And not necessarily, go straight for the questions.
Exactly. And I almost feel like, yo, like, come on. Like, we're just here at the league. We're here having a cocktail, like, whatever, you know? And it's like, and as you mentioned, you get some of the really, like, very, not hypocritical people, but very, like, shady people, Charlie, where they're like, oh, my God, I love your show. Oh, yeah, really? Oh, what episode did you listen to? Oh, I love all of them. Oh, really? Oh, okay. See, at that point, that's when I know they're full of crap, and I'm just like, okay, bartender, hi. Let me have a Johnny Walker on the rocks, thanks. And you know, I'm cordial. You know, I'm Cuban, so you know what I'm saying. So I don't have a filter. So if someone rubs me the wrong way, I have
sure.
No reservations whatsoever. But I always find these interactions funny when they see me or. They're very nervous, or it feels like they're walking eggshells. I say to people, yo, calm down. Like, we're here having a cocktail, chill. Like, let's just talk. Let's talk sports. Let's talk, I don't know, Marvel, DC, whatever, you know? I find it really funny that I think people feel the need to be so nervous around. And I'll be honest with you, Charlie. Like, again, there are a lot of things diametrically that you and I are opposed to, but I think what joins us a little bit, and I think what combines is an alliance, right? Sort of like a form of journalistic Avengers, right? Very, if you read comic books and you watch the movies, I think you'll know what I'm talking about. Like, the Avengers are kind of brought together, and they're very different guys and girls, you know, but they, you know, they can sort of click together. It seems like, you know, you and I kind of represent this group of journalistic Avengers where we're very different ideologically and policy-wise. But I think that what we represent is this hunger that people have for journalists to be honest, to be out there, you know, trying to get answers, trying to, get information out to people in a way that's responsible and at least to some extent objective. And the reason I definitely want to pay you a compliment because I know you do that with New Brunswick Today. I go after my peers a lot. And if you listen to this show and you listen to my other shows, I go to town on people like Uncle Dave, you know, David Cruz of NJTV. And I'll be honest, I even go after some of my own colleagues at Insider NJ, you know, Maxi Pizarro, the editor-in-chief, and even little JJ, you know, Jay Lasseter. You know, again, I get it. They're more on the left. But I just – it's frustrating because it's like – you're supposed to be journalists. I'm an opinion journalist, Charlie, so I don't apologize for what I'm doing, but they're supposed to be journalists, right? The roll up your sleeves, the fourth estate. It just seems like they're a big representation of the bigger problem in the big liberal media establishment, Charlie. Am I wrong in the way I'm looking at this?
Well, I know we talked about this a number of times, and I feel like, you know, a lot of the failures of the media stem from the decisions of, you know, bosses, people like Kevin Whitmer, who's on his way out now at NJ Advanced Media. And,
yeah.
You know, I know that a lot of the, you know, sort of censorship that takes place is based on, you know, who is in the in crowd and specifically who is paying big bucks to advertise. So I know that, you know, NJ Advanced Media has tried to negotiate deals with Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas, and, you know, lo and behold, no wonder it's so tough to get a tough story about, those folks, or, you know, like the Rutgerses of the world. Rutgers and I have a special relationship. I'm an alum. I'm a proud alum. I learned how to, you know, ask tough questions there. And, you know, when I ask tough questions, they don't necessarily have good answers at the, you know, the Rutgers mm-hmm. administration. And, you know, they're a big advertiser, so they kind of get the soft treatment or the special treatment sometimes from media outlets. And I don't think that stems from the reporters on the ground who are actually doing the reporting. I think a lot of that massaging comes from higher up, and, you know, the folks who are looking at it a different way. But, you know, certainly I do think that, you know, the media here in New Jersey leaves a lot to be desired. And I think that there's, you know, a lot of room for improvement. Obviously, what people want is for us all to be fair. And, you know, that means, giving folks a chance to explain their perspectives and including them in stories, but also includes, you know, not being so selective about what we cover and what we don't cover, but covering things, whether they fit, you know, our so-called agenda or even if they don't, you know, but our audience is a wide audience. So we do, you know, we shouldn't be playing favorites or picking and choosing. We're here to cover the news for all of Central Jersey. And, you know, I think mm-hmm. that outlets that take that approach and really, try to think critically about what they're doing and be honest with their audience, you know, they're the ones that are going to be the most trusted. And the other outlets that take shortcuts or, you know, kind of mm-hmm. sell out are going to be the ones that people view as less credible.
I agree with you. And again, it's a testament, as I mentioned before, I'm not trying to blow up your ego here, man, but it's a testament to really why your news operation, I think, is so respected. You know, I mean, I know you do a good job. It's a tough, you know, island to be on when it comes to doing what you're doing, but you do it well. And, you know, to your point about, you know, other news sites that have either taken shortcuts or lost credibility. I mean, again, look at NJ.com and the Star Ledger. I've been going after them forever. You know, I go after Tommy Boy, you know, Tom Moran, a lot on this show and my other programs. And, you know, it's always funny when I see emails in my inbox from NJ.com, oh, you know, trust respected journalism, you know, please donate and help support, you know, independent news, you know, and it's NJ.com. I'm like, are you crazy, Charlie? I wouldn't give a nickel, bro. When I get those emails, I'm like, delete, delete, delete. I'm like, I'm not giving a nickel to the Star Ledger and NJ.com. It's like, it's sort of self-inflicted. It's like the reason people don't trust you is because you've done it to yourself. And I just find that funny whenever I see news sites like the Star Ledger and NJ.com losing traffic or losing circulation. I mean, as a matter of fact, I think the Star Ledger, or I think some, if it's the Record or the Star Ledger, I think they announced they're not going to be having any holiday editions because of cutting back. You know what, man? I get it. It's the internet. It's social media. I get it. You know, people are getting their news on their tablets, on their phones. You know, people walk around with basically a computer in their hand, right? And that's where they get their information from. So the days of print media, I get it. You know, physical, tangible papers is almost a thing of the past. But it's also, too, the reality of, a lot of these journalists are doing a disservice in general because I don't think they're being on the up and up. And again, that's why I applaud people like you and other operations that are, I think, really just trying to stay upright and stay true to, like, just being honest. And I think the readership respects that. Real quick, Charlie, speaking of New Brunswick and Rutgers, we're both alumnus from New Brunswick. Faculty member Brittany Cooper, a.k.a. Professor Crunk, has been in the news cycle a little bit. I'm not sure if you've been following that story a little bit. You've probably seen it on your newsfeed, on your Twitter. You know, I've taken Dr. Cooper, fellow PhD, the task on my Talking Politics show, on this show. You know, as an academic, man, it's just, you know, once you get tenure, you know, you pretty much have a lot of immunity, man. You can kind of get away with saying some very vile things. And let's be honest, you know, Brittany Cooper at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, you know, I'm not really happy as an alumnus that they employ a woman like this. But, hey, she's tenured. You can kind of get away with saying whatever you want because you have that sort of protection. But I don't know, man. It's those type of academics that kind of make you realize the heavy indoctrination in higher education, though, Charlie. I mean, that's at least my thoughts. Any thoughts on her, or if you've heard about her stories or her social media or some of the things that she's said over the years?
I've heard a very sparing amount about it, but I think the two of you should teach a class together would be really the move to make.
God, that would be interesting. That would be interesting. But
it would.
It
would
be.
I would like to audit that class. And,
I'd love to moderate that. I'd love you to.
But I honestly don't know very much about her. But I will say, on the flip side of tenure, you know, I tend to think it's a really good thing in places like higher ed, because you look at situations like, for instance, I filed a lawsuit against the Rutgers Board of Governors because they were, you know, silencing me in the middle of my time to speak to them. And, you know, one of the senators, the faculty reps on the board, stood up for me and said, hey, you shouldn't be silencing him just because he's asking questions. And they kicked him out of the meeting. And so we both sued. And, you know, unfortunately, we got a poor ruling this week where, you know, we may have to appeal. But, you know, the situation there is my co-plaintiff could have never sued, you know, sued the Board of Governors at Rutgers if he didn't have tenure, right? You know, he's a professor.
Sure.
He's good at it. He, you know, is compensated for it well. But, you know, it would just create situations where people were so easily, you know, cudgeled or pushed around that it would not be good for the academic environment. So I tend to support tenure, but I also understand that, you know, there's obviously some people who stay in the positions they're in way too long and, you know, would be wise to move on to other fields.
I'm with you on that. Before I let you go, though, Charlie, maybe not necessarily spoilers I want you to give tonight, but anything juicy you're working on here as we close out 2021 for New Brunswick Today?
Yeah, you know, we're, first of all, celebrating 10 years of doing the news here in New Brunswick, so it's a really special thing, and we're going to have a celebration here in downtown New Brunswick on the 18th. We'd love to have you and any of your audience join us. But we are, you know, we've definitely made a name for ourselves covering issues involving law enforcement and crime, you know, public safety. And so we've had, you know, unfortunately, you know, a rash of violence here. We're working on some stories about police transparency and, you know, some of the inconsistencies in those cases that we've been investigating, but also you know, just some straight-up law-breaking on the part of the police. They're supposed to be wearing body cameras, and that's as of 6 months ago. But New Brunswick police, as of our last time we asked, they have zero body-worn cameras out there. So we'll be doing a story about how, you know, not very much has changed here over the 10 years that we've been doing this work on those kinds of issues. Certainly we've seen a lot of big changes in other areas, but, you know, in terms of police-community relations, violence in the community here, and you know, police accountability and transparency, we're covering a lot of the same things we were when we first got started. So, you know, we'll be looking back holistically at some of our, you know, past stories and things we've exposed, mm-hmm. but also, you know, what came of that and what changes actually did happen, and in what ways have things kind of gone back to the old way.
Charlie, real quick, before I let you go, now that you mentioned that story and what you're working on, it just prompted a question in my mind. I know one of the biggest issues on the legislative agenda coming up now in January, when the new legislature convenes, is going to be the discussion about CCRBs. And
Civilian Review Boards.
Civilian Complaint Review Boards. And I've talked to, as a matter of fact, I mean, I'm just trying to finalize it, and maybe you want to mark this down in your calendar, bro. But I'm just trying to finalize it. But we should have Assembly Speaker Coughlin on Politically Direct in January.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, you want to keep an eye out for that episode for sure. But you know, it's interesting because I've talked about this not just on this show, but I've appeared on some panels talking to, as well as other podcasts. You know, maybe this is where the snooty academic in me is going to come out. And I'm not really like this. I think you've gotten to know me a little bit. I think I'm kind of a regular guy. But this is, I think, where this little bit of the snob in me is going to come out. I would much rather see, number one, the devil's in the details. Let's see what happens with the legislature. They tabled the CCRBs in an election year, which I thought was smart because if you rush it, you know, that could have been disastrous too. But I'm of the belief, though, Charlie, that, you know, I would much rather trust a body of professionals. I want to see mental health workers, clinicians. I want to see social workers. I want to see criminal justice professionals, maybe attorneys, whatever, retired police, whatever. I want to see those people on a CCRB, especially when you're going to give subpoena powers to these bodies. I'm not a big fan, bro, of giving it or putting people like these local activists or some of these groups in these towns. You know what I'm talking about? Some of these groups that, you know, they're activists 24/7. I would much rather trust professionals to be on a CCRB, again, especially that they're going to have subpoena power. Am I being too much of a snob here?
I do think that, you know, that is the key detail. Obviously, subpoena power is a must. If the board's going to have, you know, the ability to actually get to the bottom of things, they need subpoena power. In terms of who's on the board and how they're selected and what the qualifications are, you know, I'm open to, you know, different, proposals that would require people to have certain, certifications or degrees if, like you said, making sure that somebody's a social worker or somebody has a law degree on the board, I think would totally make sense. I wouldn't want to make it overly restrictive to the point where people have no chance of getting on the board and are totally excluded. But I think it is important to have a variety of perspectives on those things. And you know, some of the ones you mentioned make, you know, a lot of sense. So, I do think it's important that the towns have the power to create these boards. It's, you know, something that's, you know, again, over the last 10 years, something that hasn't moved yet. You know, there's been a lot of, you know, energy around it, a lot of activism around it. But ultimately, given the, court rulings and stuff like that, most cities have nothing to show for it. So passing that bill in lame duck could be a good thing, a good step for many cities that are dealing with these kind of, you know, longstanding problems.
Do you think it'll go through the lame duck, or do you think that once the new session convenes in January, I think that they'll maybe sit down and look at it more intensively, or do you think this will be rushed during lame duck?
I really don't know. I just know there is a lot of energy around it for it. I'm a big supporter, and I would like to see it move quickly. You know, obviously, my perspective is that this has been in the works for the entire time I've been covering New Brunswick, because I remember 10 years ago, one of the reasons we started the paper was that the police had killed someone here, and it was not getting the, in-depth coverage it deserved. And, you know, ultimately, folks then were trying to look to solutions and try to, you know, find ways to channel their frustration and energy into making things better. And one of the things that, you know, was very popular in the community was the idea of civilian review of police actions. The internal affairs process is a joke in New Jersey, and it's been totally exposed as a joke by some of our coverage and many other outlets that have looked into it. But, you know, internal affairs is people investigating their friends and keeping the results a secret. That's all we have, the only tool that we have to hold police accountable, well, that's why we're not getting the accountability we need or deserve. So, you know, body-worn cameras are a nice step, but we really need, people outside of the police to be able to subpoena those records and make determinations about what conduct's acceptable, in our cities.
Charlie, you're amazing. You're always astute, man. You got a good sense of what's going on, not just in New Brunswick politics, but in the community, but also in New Jersey. I want to thank you for your time here. You're always a gentleman to come on. I appreciate it. I know you're very busy, whether it's going to meetings and sitting there or covering stories, writing. It's laborious, man, but I appreciate you taking the time here to come on the show. I think we have great conversation. That's why I keep inviting you back. I love our dialogue. I love the way we break down things in New Jersey politics, and I certainly hope you'll come back in 2022. I'll make it a point to follow up, obviously, look at your schedule, and we'll coordinate, obviously, to have you back on regularly as we have here for the better part of the second half of 2021, and we want to keep going strong in 2022. So, you know, I want to thank you for your time. You're always a gentleman, Miller. So I'll give you the last word here.
Well, thank you, Fernando. I really, really appreciate the opportunity and look forward to future conversations. Wish you a very happy holiday season, and maybe we'll see you for our 10th anniversary.
Oh, are you having an event? I mean, what's going on? What's up?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll be at the Above Art Studios in downtown New Brunswick the evening of the 18th of December, and you know, you're welcome to come along and meet the team that makes all this happen.
Wow, okay. You know, I appreciate the invite. All right, good stuff, man. Congratulations again on 10 years. You're doing God's work, man, as they say. Journalism is sometimes a very, very crazy profession. So you're doing good stuff, man. God bless you, bro. Happy holidays
to you.
Happy Festivus. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah to you and your family and to all your readers and listeners. So God bless you, bro. Keep up the good work, and we'll see you soon here on Politically Direct.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Have a good one, brother. All right, folks, here, 10:10 here on the East Coast. Show went a little bit long, but it's always good to do that because of the guests. And, of course, tonight with Charlie Cradivo, the owner, founder, and the editor of New Brunswick Today, a great news site in Central Jersey at www.newbrunswicktoday.com. Again, congrats to them celebrating 10 years online and being a voice, really, for New Brunswick residents and nearby municipalities, too, because of, you know, what they're doing and certainly being an outlet for their readership. So good job by Charlie. You know, that, you know, I got to thank Joey Block for kind of linking us together. We appeared in some panels together on his show. So I'm grateful to Joey Block for doing that and, you know, again, putting me in contact with a great guest like Charlie Cradivo. So, folks, if you don't read New Brunswick Today on a regular basis, do so, www.newbrunswicktoday.com. Make sure you like them on Facebook as well and also on Twitter. Great stuff there in Central Jersey. Folks, that's our show for this week here. And, again, happy December to you all. We appreciate you being loyal listeners of the program. Here every single week via www.insidernj.com/podcast. Again, you can listen to not just today's episode in its entirety, but all of our previous episodes going back to its inception in January of 2018. Folks, we've had great traffic. I owe it all to you, my loyal listening audience, who've made it possible. Folks, if you have any suggestions for guests or topics coming up in the new year, please write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Certainly, you can always follow me on Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe, and also hit me up on Twitter at No Filter Uribe. Make sure you like Politically Direct on Facebook as well. And certainly, tons of new likes, followers, tons of commentary, people. You know, really, the traffic speaks for itself. And I can't say enough, really, about your support this year and going into 2022. Big election year, obviously, midterm elections, you got congressional seats. We have a lot, we have some mayoral elections in some big towns throughout New Jersey, Newark, obviously, Bayonne, other towns throughout the state. They'll be having elections, and we'll definitely be covering that in the new year and talking to candidates, talking to incumbents, that and much more, obviously, all the good things you've come to expect from Politically Direct here every single week on Blog Talk Radio. As always, the episode is brought to you by Insider NJ. I'm proud to partner with Insider NJ, folks, the leader in statewide news in the Garden State. Of course, folks, check it out, www.insidernj.com. Of course, you can check out past editions of the podcast, again, at insidernj.com/podcast. Can't say enough about how proud I am to be a part, you know, of the Insider NJ family. Special thank you to the Graham family, specifically Mike and Ryan Graham collectively, as well as my Insider GM, Pete Onelia, who is a, again, great boss to work for. Can be a little bit of a pain, kind of drags his feet sometimes in posting things and not really always, you know, responsive, but, you know, great to work for. So good to see him at the League of Municipalities where he actually, you know, in front of me was like, oh, thanks. I kind of noticed when you do say, you know, I drag my feet. So it's good to see Pete is listening to the show and, you know, is you know, aware of what I say on the air. So I appreciate that. I appreciate his support of the podcast as well. And again, folks, check it out. Once you do on the website, you'll see it on the upper right-hand corner, the subscribe button. Click on it, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. And you'll see that in your inbox every morning as you're getting ready for work, making breakfast for the kids, working out, whatever it is. Folks, it'll be right there waiting for you. Oh, make sure you like Insider NJ on Facebook and follow it also on Twitter. And always remember to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Folks, that's our show for this week. One thing I want to give a special thank you to New Brunswick Today editor, Charlie Cradoville, for joining me on the podcast. Really, really good breakdown of what happened on election night and obviously other things statewide. So it's always good to talk with him. So I want to thank him for his time. And folks, we will not have a broadcast next week. I will be at the Statewide Hispanic Chamber of Commerce Winter Gala, a nice black tie event. So, you know, kind of looking nice. So maybe a tuxedo look, who knows? We'll see. But looking forward to that. And I'll get some more episodes up on the show with the podcast before the end of the year, obviously. Again, you know, check out previous episodes at www.insidernj.com/podcast. Without you, my low-listening audience, this show would not be possible. Always remember, ladies and gentlemen, if it's unbiased, unfiltered, and unafraid, it's always the four-time award-winning Politically Direct. As always, I am New Jersey's premier journalist and the sworn enemy of all the toxic progressives, the social justice clowns, and the woke fools. We all know who they are throughout the state of New Jersey, folks. And it's always me standing up to them. Fernando Uribe, staying so long, as always. Folks, thank you so much for listening and tuning in. I'll see you again soon here on Block Talk Radio. And as always, let's keep on talking.